We're on? Okay. Scott, are we ready to go from your viewpoint? All right, Scott says we're good. All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. We're meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is June 10th, approximately 1:30. We've moved our schedule to the meeting for the afternoon because of some meetings commissioners had this morning. So thank you all for adjusting to our schedule. Looks like we have a good turnout today. I see the Honorable Mrs. Chrisman here today. Beth, thank you for coming. And the I don't really have any opening comments other than I just we've all seen the news about that train derailment in the northeastern part of Canada, and it just it's unfortunate, but it does reinforce the importance of making sure we have emergency response plans for when we do our pipelines and all those kind of things, because this took place, you know, I haven't seen the numbers today, but it just strikes the importance of making sure you've got good plans in place. The time to bust out your emergency response plan is when the accident happens, not to be trying to organize it then. So I don't have any additional thoughts other than that. Commissioner Chrisman?
Two points I was going to point out, and one of them I only thought of when you were talking about the accident. I came back from the NDATC meetings and found out about the amount of wind damage that had been sustained in the last couple of days to our northwest, kind of from Killdeer to here about. And there are a lot of trees down that take down fences and those sorts of things. And there are some power lines down, but it's kind of remarkable that it's not a lot more than it is when you have that kind of wind and trees going down and that sort of thing. So I think that the system, you know, should almost take it as a compliment that there's only a minimal amount of damage and that it's fixed rather quickly. The other thing, and you started on, we actually have two people to welcome back to the 12th and 13th floor area of the Capitol. Dale Wetzel has, I think, not been here for a couple of meetings and is back again. And my wife, Bethany, who he worked for a number of years just upstairs in the Labor Department and has now come to pay us a visit.
All right. Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Prochak?
I wasn't going to make any opening comments, but to add to Randy's comments about the how quickly the utilities bring things back online, I was in Spirit of Life Church yesterday at about 5:30, and it was the power was out, but my sister-in-law had left us a treat in the freezer there, and so the priest said, "Sure, come on in. The power's out, but we'll get there." And he took out his camera, phone, flashlight, and led us into the freezer, and we got our ice cream cake out of the freezer, and he says, "Yeah, the power's been off for a while, but I'm sure it'll be back on any minute. In fact, I'm surprised it isn't already." And I did make a note to myself, like, we really take this for granted. the companies get this stuff, it's off and it's on very quickly again. So I thought about it differently since I'm serving on the PSC.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Julie. And also, Nick, thank you for coming by the trib, and Dave, appreciate it. With that, we have a few items on consent today. I would move passage of the items on consent.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Daryl. There's one item on consent that I did want to highlight. You'll notice the very first item consent, BK1, talks about the commission canceling a certificate of site compatibility for an energy conversion facility, CPV Ashley Renewable Energy. This is, I think, significant. It's actually, we received a letter from the company wishing to receive the money back they did for the filing fee. The commission had approved this for up to 200 megawatts of wind. At the time of the hearing, the potential energy was going to be going to the Tennessee Valley Authority. The letter back from the company didn't say exactly why they no longer need the certificate. But it is significant because that was one of the projects that I was set on early, and we did approve it. But my guess is that they just didn't have the right amount of transmission lines to move the project to the east. But that is, I think, a significant point to bring out for the consent item. So moving into the regular agenda items, item BK1. Believing that there will be no prejudice in the rights of the parties or the public interest, and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 6902.04.04, Montana Dakota Utility Company's 345 kV transmission line, Ellendale to South Dakota border, public convenience and necessity, case number PU 13272, with Ottertail Power Company's 345 kV transmission line, Ellendale to the South Dakota border, public convenience and necessity, case number PU13273, and issue a notice of opportunity for consolidated hearing. I further move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 in each case.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. The little background on this particular line, this is one of 17 projects involved in MISO, which are called multi-value projects. It's one that the commission has been, for me personally, been waiting quite a while to get this to this point. This is going to be a big line for North Dakota. There's actually only 10 miles that will be in North Dakota. The remaining approximately 160 miles will be in South Dakota. It'll connect the Ellendale area to the Big Stone area. Like I said, North Dakota's share is 10 miles, approximately $41 million, but this will really beef up the reliability and help free some of the congestion in there, that area. Ironically enough, that this line was in place, it might have helped out that previous wind farm that maybe got sidelined. So I look forward to the consolidated opportunity for hearing on this one, and while it's a relatively small portion of the line is in North Dakota, it'll have a big impact to the customers and consumers in North Dakota. Positive impact, I would say.
Just to add to that, if I'm understanding these MISO MVP projects, the cost of this is shared over all the ratepayers in the MISO region and won't just be absorbed by the ratepayers in North Dakota.
Absolutely.
So I think that's an important added value to this project as well.
And I did forget to point out, the comments and requests for hearing must be received by August 19th of 2013.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Gerald. Item BK2. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Griggs County Telephone Company for certificates of public convenience and necessity to provide facility-based incumbent local exchange telecommunication services in the Enderlin and Sheldon exchanges in North Dakota, case number PU13-329, and the application of Griggs County Telephone Company for designation as an essential telecommunication carrier to receive federal universal service funding for those exchanges, dealing with case number PU13-330.
Second.
Second.
In June of this year, Griggs filed an application for certificates of public convenience and necessity to provide the facility-based incumbent local exchange services in the Enderlin and Sheldon exchanges. Griggs reported merging with Moore and Liberty Telephone Company effective September 11th of last year, so the merger is no doubt what prompted this filing today. Also on June 11th, Griggs filed an application for designation for the Enderlin and Sheldon exchanges in North Dakota, case number PU13-330. Comments, requests for hearing must be received by August 23rd, 2013. And just a point of clarification, the town of Sheldon is not named after Scott Sheldon, who works at the PSC. So with that, everything appears to be in order.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK3. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utility Company's application for advanced termination of prudence in the Lewis and Clark Generating Station, case number PU13-332.
Second.
In June of this year, MDU filed an application for advanced termination of prudence for the Lewis and Clark Station for a filterable particulate matter pollution control projects. Approximately 60% of the customers served by MDU reside in the state of North Dakota and are supplied from the company's integrated system. The main driver for this project is the new MATS rule, mercury and air toxic standards, which the companies will need to comply with by the end of 2015. The projected costs for this project are $27.7 million, with approximately $19.7 million being allocated to North Dakota. If approved, the average customer would see an increase of rates of $1.40 per month as a result of this project. I guess the big driver here, once again, is the EPA over the last couple of years has issued out several different rulemakings. This particular one was finally published in the Federal Register in February 16th of 2012. So this has been going on for quite some time. I just look forward to the opportunity for a hearing. And not so much on this particular case, but I think this project highlights the concerns that I've had and that probably the other commissioners, is that as we get rulemaking coming down from the EPA, it ends up trickling down, and this is where it actually rubber meets the road, where the costs are then applied to the projects. The projects then get paid for by ratepayer dollars, and you'll actually see a cost to the customers. So this particular one, like I said, has been out there for many years, that most folks are very well aware of it. But I'm concerned as we go forward with the EPA now, with new rules that we're promulgating, how the impact to North Dakota customers is going to be. So we'll look forward to this potential hearing, but also keep a close eye on what's coming out of the EPA. Comments and requests for hearing for this particular case must be received by August 28th of 2013.
Just to piggyback on your comments a little bit, Commissioner Kalk, in terms of impact to customers, I share your concerns in terms of how much people are aware of the translation of new environmental regulations to costs that they pay. And I'm not saying that these costs aren't justified or that the goals aren't noble and lofty and important, but I do think people need to understand what those are and be aware of them when we go down this path. I also have been learning more and more about what the companies go through in tackling these kinds of projects. And I note in their application that MDU considered an extensive number of options in determining what to actually build, and then sensitivity scenarios. You know, they looked at simple cycle combustion turbines, reciprocating engines, combined cycle combustion turbines, coal-fired, self-built wind, solar, biomass, solid waste fuel generation, purchase power, and wind. And then they went through a whole bunch of sensitivity scenarios for low natural gas prices, high natural gas prices, low customer growth, high customer growth, a $30 carbon tax, a $50 carbon tax, high combustion turbine costs, and other MISO planning requirements. All of these different scenarios the companies have to consider and then ultimately try to find the lowest cost alternative, and all the time not knowing what the rules are going to be. And that's the biggest difficulty, I think, is the uncertainty in what we need to prepare for. And these companies are making long-term investments that ratepayers have to pay for. And it's just a very difficult environment right now in which to do that with the regulatory uncertainty on the national level. So I think two things. Our country needs to get a national energy policy that has some certainty, an environmental policy that has certainty, and customers need to start deciding how much they're willing to pay for this stuff.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK4. I move the Commission deem the application complete, conditioned on filing final turbine locations by August 14th, 2013, initially, a notice of filing and notice of hearing in the application of Elite Incorporated for a certificate of site compatibility to construct a proposed 210-megawatt Bison 4 wind project in Mercer, Morton, and Oliver counties of North Dakota, case number PU 13-127.
Second.
The proposed Bison Wind 4 project will consist of up to 70 wind turbines located in the areas we previously discussed. Basically, I looked at the map. The west edge of the project area touches Highway 49, straight south of Beulah, approximately 15 miles. So that would be in Commissioner Christman's home area. The public hearing on this application is scheduled to begin August 21st, 2013, at 1:30 in the Oliver County Courthouse, located in Center, North Dakota. The overall projected cost of this project is $400 million, and they're hoping to start construction in the fall of 2013. So, as we've seen in previous wind filings, it looks like the Bison Farms, they have the interconnection they've used before. They're hoping to start construction by the end of this year to comply with the goals of the production tax credit. So I look forward to the hearing. This one's actually scheduled relatively soon. We'll be out there next month.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. That concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Mr. Chairman, I move the commission approve revision number 30 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK-8405 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to allow remining of the abandoned Figginskow underground coal mine and to update other information and reclamation plans in the existing permit. I further move the approval of the stipulation that increases the amount of self-bond number SB-9503-3 to $68,850,000.
Second.
On October 5th of last year, the Falkirk Mining Company filed the application for revision number 30 to this permit to add plans for the remining of the abandoned Figginskow underground coal mine that is located just north of State Highway 200, about 3 miles east of Underwood. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this revision application and respectfully recommends that it be approved. This abandoned mine area encompasses approximately 100 acres. It was previously mined by underground methods back in the 30s and 40s and is located within Falkirk's approved permit area. Remining through the largest portions of this abandoned mine area is expected to be completed in approximately 5 years. Our Century Code provides that remining of abandoned underground mines approves of remining of these abandoned underground mines. Falkirk submitted the affidavits of publication of the newspaper notice that was published last November for 4 weeks in the Bismarck Tribune, the McLean County Independent, Underwood News, and the Washburn Leader. We also notified the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and the advisory committee members of this application. We received no objections to the revision application. Falkirk is being required to increase the performance bond amount due to an update to the worst-case reclamation cost estimate. This consolidated bond area is currently covered by a combination of surety, collateral, and self-bonds that total $74,450,000. The updated reclamation cost estimate shows that the total bond amount must be increased to at least $76,455,000, and Falkirk has increased the bond amount for this consolidated bond area to $76,500.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, I move the commission acknowledge Fairmount Minerals' April 16th of this year filing of a compliance plan concerning two truck scales located at Blaisdell, North Dakota, and grant an extension of the temporary variance permit issued for each truck scale, changing the expiration date from October 31st of 2013 to October 31st of 2014, and that's case number WM-13-56.
Second.
We had a work session on this some time ago, actually two of them, one when we did the original variance and one to discuss their response. And I visited the site personally a few weeks ago and just kind of looked at it to get something other than a lot of numbers and statistics of grade and things like that. And first of all, when I visited it, there had been a lot of rain, and so everything was mucky and kind of messy at the scale site as well as everywhere else. So that was that might have slightly limited the value of the tour that I had. But just because of the geography, one of the things were they're needing a variance in order to meet our standards is the slope and length of their ramp. And there's a very large hill in the distance, and in order to quite meet our guidelines, it would take major earth moving. And in discussion during the work session, and as well as looking at it, I just feel like we're entering into a new time with our heavy scaly testing, and we'll get a chance to test this a couple times, test it for accuracy, maybe hear from truck drivers whether they're having any troubles there. But at this point, to shut them down or cause them to go through very large-scale earth-moving project just for the sake of meeting some standards, when we can't really point to anything that it is really causing a problem, seems wrong, too. And so the motion is to extend the temporary permit for another year, and let's just see how this is working out. Perhaps some of our guidelines will eventually be brought more into line with the federal NIST standards, and give us a little time to see how this is working.
Sure. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I thought this was a good example of looking at the goals of the regulation, not exactly the letter of the regulation met to a T, to make sure that we're asking businesses to meet these requirements because they serve a purpose, and a very defined purpose of having accurate scales. That's the goal of the weights and measures, and having accurate scales. And I think that while they should have looked at our rules ahead of time and known exactly what they were and built to that, they didn't. So we did the best possible, took the best possible approach here, and are making sure that the scales are accurate, which is ultimately our job. So I thought it was a good compromise.
Sure, and the testing that's been done so far, the scales are staying in compliance. That was the big thing. When we granted the first variance, if the scales would have come back out of compliance, I think that would have been the end of it. They would have changed the way it was built. But everything we've seen so far is the scales are holding their accuracy.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Commission approve renewal number 6 to surface coal mining permit number BNCR-8106 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Center Mine to extend the permit term on the existing permit area for another 5 years until July 18 of 2018.
Second.
On February 7th of this year, BNI filed the application for renewal number 6 to the surface coal mining permit number BNCR-8106 to continue mining operations within this existing permit area for another 5 years. This area covers portions of Oliver County totaling just over 1,200 acres. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this 5-year permit renewal application and respectfully recommends its approval. BNI Coal applied for this permit renewal because the mine office, the shop complex, the haul road, some topsoil and subsoil stockpiles, and sedimentation ponds in this permit area are used to support mining operations and other center mine permits. Coal removed from this permit area was actually completed several years ago. They submitted the affidavits of publication for the newspaper notices. We notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and the advisory committee members, and we received no objections to this renewal application. Evidence of adequate performance bond and liability insurance are on file, and just for the record, the surety and collateral bonds total just over $31.5 million on this mine permit.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, will the Commission acknowledge Environmental Materials Incorporated's May 23rd, 2013 filing of a compliance plan concerning its truck scale located at Kildare, North Dakota, and grant an extension of the temporary variance permit issued for the truck scale, changing the expiration date from October 31st of this year to October 31st of 2014. It's case number WM-13-162.
Second.
Environmental Materials had a variance. They had some things that were out of compliance. They submitted their plans to become compliant, and in that plan, they would be spending a fair amount of money again. And based on the motion or the plans for the motion that we just had a few minutes ago with the scale up at Blaisdell. My thought was that it's more appropriate to give these guys another year or two because they have similar issues. Maybe not as difficult of challenge to get them into compliance based on the topography of the land around their scale. But if it turns out that the facility at Blaisdell continues to hold accuracy and that by next year that turns out to be a long-term exemption, it wouldn't have seemed right to hold this other competitive Kildare facility to a more urgent standard. And so even though they seem prepared to go ahead and fix this, and they are certainly welcome to, and just alleviate any question of what the future holds for them, but this motion would give them the extra year also to see once how these things are going to hold.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Commission adopt the consent order in Public Service Commission versus Commercial Links Incorporated complaint, case number GE-13-219.
Second.
Commercial Links Incorporated is a corporation with their principal offices in Alexandria, Virginia. They're registered as a foreign business corporation with the Secretary of State's office and is in good standing. They operated as a roving grain buyer within the state of North Dakota without the required license, bond, and corresponding filing requirements. On May 10th of this year, the licensing division director sent a letter via electronic mail to CLI informing them that they must stop operating as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota immediately. On May 21st, they responded and indicated they had received 15,000 bushels of green peas from a farmer in North Dakota. And on May 30th, they said that they paid all the dues for the green peas. And as of May 30th, they do not owe any payments to any farmers in North Dakota. They acknowledged that at the time of signing the consent of entry to entry of order, which is attached, they were aware of and had been advised of their rights, and they exclusively waived their rights. And for purposes of resolving this matter without further administrative proceedings, CLI and the Commission have agreed that CLI will be assessed a fine of $1,000, of which $500 is suspended for a period of 2 years from the date of this order, during the term of which CLI shall not violate any further provisions of Title 60 of the North Dakota Century Code, and they agree to pay then the fine of $500, which is made payable to the PSC within 10 days. They did also send along, and it's attached here, an apology and an explanation. That's actually attached to the next motion. But basically the explanation is that they had done business years ago as a roving grain buyer here and suspended operations, and then some years later with different employees resumed again, and there was some confusion over what was needed. But the next motion will be their application for a new license. And so, you know, it doesn't seem like anything has gone awry here. There was just a snafu, and they didn't do things as they should have, and they're eager to make up for it and get on the right track.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, my item number 6, I move the Commission approve the roving grain buyer license application in case number GE-13-220 for Commercial Links Incorporated of Alexandria, Virginia. Their purchase volume estimate is 100,000 bushels. They filed a $50,000 bond, and they'll be increasing that to 100.
Second.
I really kind of covered this on the previous motion, that what had happened and that they were operating. That's why they're going to add another $50,000 to their bond. And attached to this motion, you can see their kind of pretty nice apology letter and explanation of what happened and the misunderstanding on the previous case. And it appears to me a good company that made a mistake, and hopefully they can do business here and some farmers can make some money with them.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Commission assess a proposed penalty for notice of violation number 1301 issued to BNI Coal Limited and issue a notice of informal conference in the matter.
Second.
This is notice of violation number 1301 was issued to BNI Coal on May 29th of this year for failure to properly construct and maintain a sump and silt fence used as sediment control measures to minimize sediment deposition on adjacent undisturbed areas. BNI has requested an informal conference in the matter, and the Commission needs to propose a civil penalty for the notice of violation and issue a notice of informal conference in the matter. The Reclamation Division recommends that the Commission propose a civil penalty of $1,000 for this violation and issue a notice of informal conference for August 19 of this year. During a routine inspection on May 29th, the Commission inspectors observed spoil and overburden deposition on undisturbed land below an existing silt fence and sump. During previous inspections, our inspectors had pointed out the need for additional sediment control measures at this and another nearby location. Appropriate measures had been taken at the other location, and that sediment control system performed satisfactorily. However, the same measures were not taken at this location, and runoff from May rains resulted in the sediment deposition on the adjacent undisturbed area. The required remedial action required BNI to reconfigure the existing sump and silt fence to prevent the additional sediment deposition on undisturbed land within 10 days and to remove the sediment from the undisturbed area as condition allows within 45 days. Subsequent inspections have indicated that the sump and the silt fence have been adequately reconstructed, but the sediment has not been removed from the undisturbed area due to the really wet conditions. Since BNI has requested an informal conference on this violation, the Commission is required to propose a civil penalty prior to the informal conference. The amount of the proposed penalty can be contested during the informal conference. All parties are available on the afternoon of August 19th for that informal conference. And four factors have to be considered here in determining the amount of the proposed civil penalty. And I'll go through them. One is the history of violations. And based on the criteria that this commission has used in the past, BNI does not have a history of violations, and therefore a penalty assessment based on history is not warranted. The second factor is the seriousness of the violation. Approximately 2 to 4 inches of overburden and spoil sediment covered an area about 1,500 square feet on this undisturbed land. And so although the degree of sediment deposition was not substantial, and it's likely that the accumulated sediment can be removed without impacting the topsoil, a certain degree of environmental damage did occur, and the potential for additional damage certainly did exist. So the recommended penalty assessment for the seriousness is $250. The third factor is negligence. And in this case, we believe that the notice of violation was caused by BNI's failure to take sufficient measures to maintain and strengthen the sump and silt fence at this location. This concern had been pointed out to BNI staff on several previous inspections, and actions taken by BNI were limited to installing some straw bales behind the silt fence. So the recommended penalty assessment for the negligence is $750. And finally, the fourth factor is good faith. And no deduction can be made for normal compliance. And so the compliance in this case was considered normal, and therefore no deduction for good faith is warranted. So in conclusion, the Reclamation Division recommends a civil penalty of $1,000. The conference will be held in the Commission Hearing Room beginning at 1:30 p.m. Central Time, August 19th of 2013. Ellen Holberg from the Office of Administrative Hearings will preside over the informal conference and will issue a recommended order in the matter.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Mr. Chairman, my last agenda item, RC8, I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-13-511, canceling facility-based grain buyer license number 2074 issued to CHS Incorporated of St. Paul, Minnesota, at the West Fargo, North Dakota location, and ordering that business at West Fargo, North Dakota is discontinued.
Second.
The licensing division received a request to discontinue business from CHS for its West Fargo facility. They're no longer receiving grain at this warehouse, and the facility has been sold, so that's why we're revoking the license.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
By the way, one thing I should have pointed out, because I had this question, and in case somebody else might be lingering with the same question, I just asked in the lead up to today's meeting, what happens if there's a case out there and we suspend the license, they cancel the bond, and now there's nothing left to pursue in order to make some producer whole, but the bond has a holding period for 6 years.
Oh.
So if a case came up in the coming weeks or months or even several years, that bond can still be made use of by us.
All right, thank you, Randy. I wonder if it's significant to note that your wife stayed here through my motions but left during yours.
I noticed that as well.
Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Fedorchik, I'll turn it over to you, but just I'd ask a privilege, a profession, if we could, before you do JF 3 and 4, I wanted to interject before those two motions, if that's all right.
Before them?
Before them.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Fair enough. We should be really suspicious if Beth comes back now.
Absolutely. I couldn't pass it up.
All right. I move the Commission adopt the order for Otter Tail Power Company's 2013 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Adjustment Factor Tariff, case number PU-13-16.
Second.
On December 28, 2012, Otter Tail Power filed a request for approval of its 2013 Renewable Resource Cost Recovery Adjustment Factor for recovering its costs associated with its wind farms. The proposed factor includes updated costs and revenue information for investments in Langdon, Ashtabula, and Laverne wind projects. The proposal would reduce the current factor by 28 cents per month for a typical residential customer using 750 kilowatt hours. We issued a notice of opportunity for hearing on March 27th. We received no comments or requests for a hearing. On April 8th, the staff filed its response noting that it reviewed the information filed by Otter Tail and recommends the Commission approve the application. No petitions to intervene, comments, or requests for hearing were received.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just maybe add, as these wind farms, the life continues, at some point in time, I think the Commission will go back and look at maybe just rolling these into the rates of the company instead of having these wind riders. So maybe as we get into next year's, we might look at that again. So, but I have this order is completely fine to me.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the Commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order, and issue Certificate of Corridor Compatibility Number 142 and Route Permit Number 155 in Dakota Gasification Company's siting application to build a 3.5-mile, 10-inch natural gas pipeline from the Dakota Gasification Plant to basins Basin Electric's Antelope Valley Station in Mercer County, North Dakota, case number PU-13-22.
Second.
On January 2nd, Basin filed a letter of intent to construct a 3.5 10-inch diameter natural gas pipeline connecting their Antelope Valley Station to Dakota gasification via pipeline on the DGC plant site in Mercer County. We had a hearing in June on this issue in Mercer County. There was no members of the public that showed up to protest or comment on the matter. The purpose of this pipeline is to provide Basin with access to natural gas for use in periodic startup activities at the Antelope Valley Station electric generation facility to achieve compliance with the Electric Generating Units Mercury and Air Toxic Standards, otherwise known to all EGU MATS rule promulgated by the EPA in February of 2012. This proposed pipeline is the most efficient, cost-effective method to enable Antelope Valley to achieve compliance with this EPA rule and will have the least impact reasonably possible with the environment, future development, and use of the area and human health and welfare in the vicinity of the proposed route. No exclusions areas were identified. No avoidance areas were identified. No historic sites were going to be impacted, nor wetlands. The pipeline will be included and managed in accordance with GGC's existing emergency response plan. And construction is planned to start in early August 2013 at a total cost of completed by September, the total cost of $6.5 million. During the hearing, this is basically the reason for this project is to replace their existing fuel source, which was fuel oil, for starting up the generating facility with gas. Reduces their emissions. It's a very minimal amount. How much it reduces their emissions, their total emissions impact. It's a fraction of 1% how much this reduces their emissions. And again, this is kind of an example of another EPA regulation that the consumers are going to bear the cost of this $6.5 million. And in this case, the benefit is going to be very small. So I think it's noteworthy in that respect. Nevertheless, we have an order before us that I recommend we approve.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just to kind of further the point that was made earlier regarding the Lewis and Clark station, and many say that the war on coal is just beginning with some announcements that were made last week. Here's another perfect example of the fact that it's been ongoing for a while. And when we talk about $6.5 million cost that is going to be built in and be paid for by the consumers for this plant, this is the most efficient method they could think of to solve the problem for this plant. But most other coal plants aren't right next door and adjacent to a gas plant from which they can just run a short pipeline for $6.5 million and get gas. Most of the other plants are going to have to find other, even more costly solutions for this one rule that makes minimal difference and just continues to drive up the cost to the consumers, and I think likely will drive a lot of manufacturers overseas.
Is there further discussion? Since none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Chairman.
Yes, ma'am. I just have a request for items JF3 and JF4. Right now, they're currently scheduled to issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in both cases. But I would request, if it's okay with my colleagues, that we just basically strike out the words of opportunity. So in both cases, we move the commission issue a notice of hearing for both cases. I want to do hearings in both these cases, and I guess I could explain now or explain after you do the motion, but I just don't see any value if I already know up front that I want to do hearings in both these cases. If we issue the notice of opportunity for hearing, then we'd be coming back later to do a notice of hearing, and based on the ADP that I was part of on this several years ago, I know that I'm going to be requesting a hearing just to look in the difference between the South Dakota SIP and potential North Dakota impact. So that would be the rationale that I would ask that you modify those two motions. And then we can get talking to council. We can get the dates set in those hearings after we make those motions and get the clock ticking on these.
I have no problem with your change.
Sounds very reasonable to me.
Yep.
Okay, very well then. Thank you.
So I move the commission issue a notice of hearing for case numbers PU 13-79 and PU 13-84.
Second.
So this is hearing on the to establish an environmental cost recovery rider tariff and rate for the purpose of allowing Otter Tail Power to recover the environmental costs associated with compliance with the South Dakota Haze State Implementation Plan and U.S. EPA regulations. On May 8th, Otter Tail updated its application to notify the commission that the original estimated costs of these upgrades had been reduced from $489 million to $405 million, a reduction of 17%. Otter Tail owns 53.9% of the plant and requests return on invested capital and any related expenses associated with these environmental upgrades. The environmental rate surcharge applies to all retail customers, and in the case of Otter Tail customers, it is estimated to be $2.32 per month for those using an average of 750 kilowatts an hour. The in their application, the recovery would begin this year and take place for a number of years, for a total by 2016 of an increase of 15% on the average ratepayers' rates. I will note we weren't part of the original ADP process that was undertaken in examining this project, but this original plant was built in 1975 for the cost of approximately $150 million. So the upgrades now that are being proposed are, you know, significantly higher than the cost of the original plant. However, at that time, there were very few environmental controls required, and so we are now upgrading this plant with some probably necessary SOx and NOx and emissions reductions in addition to the haze requirements that this helped drive this project. So I think they're according to the Otter Tail, the emissions of nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide, and mercury will be reduced by 80 to 90% with the addition of this new technology. So other things to consider in this application.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just to add a little bit more to that, if I could, the Commissioner Fedorchak set it up perfectly that I do believe there are necessary improvements that need to be made to this plant, and that's why it was myself, Commissioner Clark, and Commissioner Kramer that issued the ADP on this, saying that there certainly was need for some improvements. But at the end of that discussion, the three of us really wrestled with Otter Tail initially had a recommendation number 6 that basically did not include some costs for what they would say, an imperceivable cleaning up of the air, if you will, just a visual. So South Dakota did not go with Otter Tail's recommendation. They went with the recommendation. Let me look here now. Otter Tail recommended option number 6. South Dakota, however, went with option number 8 based on the input they'd received from some of the groups that came and testified. And so the big difference here is that during our initial hearing, in response to questioners, quite honestly, from Commissioner Clark, the witness agreed that despite the decision of South Dakota, that the visual improvement by employing the SCR that South Dakota was recommending could not be perceived. So basically, South Dakota agreed to spend more costs that the human eye could not notice any difference in the changes. So when we issued this ADP, we basically said that, yes, there certainly are some costs available, costs needed to make sure this plant stays in compliance with certain things. But we did not agree that the Cadillac version that you can't be discerned by the human eye would be needed. So that, to me, would become the single point of the hearing, is that in reading what the company has said, they're still going with the South Dakota recommendation, is not what Otter Tail initially recommended. So they'll need to convince me why those additional costs to meet South Dakota's requirement that don't help your vision any, why that's justified. So I look forward to a very, very interesting hearing on that.
I will make one correction to my comments. The $150 million was Otter Tail Power share of the cost of the original plan. The total cost was $300 million. Of the original plant.
I also, too, I would add that the last paragraph we put in our ADP was, this commission chooses not to bind future commissions on the questions of prudence of one air quality control technology compared to another. This question is best left to a future proceeding in which rate recovery is requested. So here we are today. But that was what we envisioned when we approved the ADP, that some things were certainly needed. But at that point, I don't think the three of us agreed that all the money that they were potentially going to spend would be prudent. So here we are today, and we'll answer that question now.
Fair enough.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice for hearing in case number PU 13-83 and PU 13-85.
Second.
This is essentially the same case, just for MDU rather than Otter Tail Power. They're seeking to establish a tariff to allow for recovery of their costs of the improvements at the Big Stone Electric Generation Plant. In MDU's case, the estimated cost per customer is $1.52 per month for the average customer. Otherwise, all the same considerations apply.
And I would echo my same considerations from the previous case apply to this one as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my items, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for the allowing me to substitute those motions out. A couple notes before we open up for questions. Tomorrow, Commissioner Fedorchak and Crispin will be part of the NARUC cybersecurity training at the commission. I'm going to be up in Williston at an energy symposium. And then on Friday, we're going to be in the Jamestown Law Enforcement Center for a hearing on Courtenay Wind, a 200-megawatt proposed plant. The week of July 22nd, I'll be at NARUC. I don't know if Julie and Randy, are you guys going out?
I am.
You going too, Randy? Yes. The commissioners will all be at NARUC that week of July, coming back July 29th for a formal hearing on a 10-inch oil pipeline in Mercer County. July 31st, a 14-inch crude oil pipeline hearing in Williams County. And as we get into August a little bit farther, 150 megawatts Thunder Spirit Wind down in Adams County. And then towards the end of the month, we have the Xcel rate case that will be in front of us, scheduled for at least 2 days right now. So with that, I don't have any additional thoughts. I'd be happy to open it up for questions.
I might just add one comment on NARUC. I've been invited to co-moderate a panel on the gas committee on flared gas, and they were very interested in examining what's going on in North Dakota. And so we will be featuring Justin Kringsted as one of the panel members, and he'll explain what the challenges are and the flaring of gas in North Dakota and what some of the solutions are and what is our trajectory for getting that under control. So looking forward to that at NARUC.
Do you know what day that's on?
Tuesday.
Tuesday, perfect. Yep. All right, anything else, Randy? All right, any questions at all from those at the table?
You're going to be the poster woman for wasting natural gas.
I am not going to be the poster woman for wasting it, for trying to find ways to use it. Actually, Justin is the poster child for that. I'm just moderating the discussion.
The Bison 4, are Bison 1 through 3 operating presently?
I believe they are.
How many turbines and how much power does that represent?
1 through 3, I'll look over at Jerry. Do you know that off the top of your head, Jerry?
Let's see.
Well, she's got the cheat sheet.
Rise and wind. There's a bunch of them, isn't there, Jerry? 125. I'd have to go through and do all the adding.
Okay, Bison 1, how many? Do you have that?
Jerry, the one I see here is 125.
Okay. That's 1. Okay, Bison 2.
I don't see it listed. You'll have to decipher your chart.
Now, if I understand JF3 and JF4 correctly, South Dakota went along with the idea that they went along with the EPA plan that was resisted up in North Dakota. Is that right?
That's the way I understand it, Dale. Okay. There was a higher level of a higher threshold that South Dakota agreed to, and the EPA blessed off. North Dakota, we did not see it that way. Our SIP is different than the South Dakota SIP right now, and the discussion still continues about the North Dakota SIP. But my concern is that in the ADP hearing, the witness that came in basically testified that there will be no visual improvement by using the higher standard, but there will be costs associated with it. And so at the ADP, we left the question open that a future commission, which would be us now, could then look at all the costs, and I'd like to have Ottertail explain and MDU why it is they chose the model they did and why they think that those ratepayer dollars are justified. I think that'll be the key issue for me in the hearing. The fact
when you,
that
when do you think this hearing's going to be? Do you have any idea?
I would say that we'll get this scheduled very soon. I would think September, October at the latest. They need to get work on this completed.
So basically, what you're going to be asking them is should the North Dakota ratepayers of Otter Tail and MDU have to pay for a haze mitigation plan in South Dakota that you may believe was too expensive for the benefit received?
We won't answer that question completely till the hearing, but I'll go back to the ADP discussion. That was exactly the point, that their witness testified that there'd be no visual improvement to North Dakota based on the additional standards.
Well, in any case, that was the argument that was made in North Dakota, was that this haze mitigation plan that the EPA wanted was too expensive, and EPA, at least to my knowledge, eventually agreed with the state of North Dakota, or went along with the state of North Dakota's preferred option, which was less expensive, right?
That is the way I understand it. But the key point for this one is that the South Dakota SIP and the North Dakota SIP are not the same. And so that would be the issue that I'd want to get into in the hearing, is that should North Dakota ratepayers pay for the additional requirements that South Dakota SIP has that the North Dakota SIP does not have?
Yeah.
If I might add one comment here, too, I look forward to that explanation in the hearings as well and understanding this in more detail. I do believe one key component between the differences in the SIPs is that this plant uses Powder River Basin coal, and our plants use lignite. The coal plants in North Dakota that have a different implementation plan use lignite, and that SNCR or SCR technology is not proven for lignite. So the EPA basically said, okay, we'll give you that. This isn't proven in North Dakota or for lignite. But it is for Powder River. And so I think that's why South Dakota was probably forced to follow that. I don't know. We'll find out in the hearing. But I think they were probably forced to use that technology, the more expensive technology.
And again, we're talking about haze. We're not talking about the health rule.
Correct.
Aesthetics, right?
That's what I'm most concerned about. Because actually, in Otter Tail's recommendation, they recommended doing it the way we're doing it in North Dakota. So there was a difference even in the initial recommendation.
The Dakota Gas 10-inch pipeline, can you tell, what is, it's unclear to me what the Antelope Valley plant's going to be using the gas for?
They're using it for their cold start when they shut down to do maintenance and they have to start the plant back up. This is the fuel that they use to start it.
Okay, and now they're using fuel oil, and they, according to this, they'd be using natural gas.
Correct.
Do you have any idea how many times they cold start the plant?
We did ask them that, and I believe in the hearing, did they say about 4 times a year?
Once a quarter.
Quarterly.
Once every
3 months. Yep.
Okay. And there's going to be enough pollution reduction here to justify building a natural gas pipeline and spending $6.5 million?
Well, and this was a siting hearing, so we didn't get into the, you know, whether this is prudent or not. They had already fought that battle. We asked that question, I asked that question, and they said, we fought that battle with EPA, and this is not their words, but this is basically what they said. We fought that battle with the EPA, and we lost. We have to do this. This is a requirement. And so now this is the best option they could find for doing that at the lowest cost.
And your this hearing doesn't have anything to do with or this whole proceeding here, the JF2 doesn't have anything to do with whether it's a good idea to build this or whether the pollution reduction is justified.
It right,
just has
correct.
To do with whether the pipeline is a good idea.
It has to do with whether the plan for putting in the pipeline follows all our siting rules and regulations.
The Commercial Links case, RC6, did the you, Randy, you mentioned 15,000 bushels of green peas that are purchased by this company from a farmer in North Dakota. Is that right? Did I hear you correctly?
That is correct.
Is that the only purchase they made?
That, at least at that point, that was the only purchase that hadn't been paid at the time. I'm not sure if they had made any previously or not, but someone called in wondering about their license, and our licensing director contacted them, and they had that purchase in the process, and they paid it off and sent the bond and application in to get licensed.
Okay. Was the person who called in the person who sold them the peas, or was it someone else?
It was someone else.
Okay. But essentially, someone called in inquiring about the license. You called, and they didn't have a license. At that time, they owed someone for $15,000 of green peas, 15,000 bushels of green peas, and that bill has been paid?
That is correct.
Okay. And what was their explanation? Can you kind of summarize it?
Yeah, I've got it right here. They were licensed in 2008 and 2009, and then they did not renew that license because they were just buying cleaned and processed grain, which does not require them to be licensed. And since then, and with some changes in employees, they this year decided to resume business of buying just regular grain that has not been cleaned or processed, and had at least that one deal on the peas, and were working on another deal when that person inquired. And then after our call, they realized their mistake, that they had ventured back into the area of needing licensing and moved forward with acquiring that.
Did they give you any indication how long they've been buying grain without a license when they needed to have one?
I think it just started. I'm looking at Sue, and she's nodding her head affirmative. Yes, they just started here this spring.
So because they applied for the license to keep the peas?
That they did. And it was green peas, too. BNI Coal, can you just explain what a sump and you kept using the term sump and silt fence. What does this mean?
Well, I didn't go look at this one myself. The silt fence, the ones that I'm familiar with, so I'm going to say it and then Jim can flail his arms if I'm describing this wrong. This kind of a plastic fibrous material that they put out with stakes and it captures the silt, and I'm sure that's the fence they're talking about, and a sump would be the hole that they would probably have in advance of that so that some water runoff can set there and the silt can go to the bottom and they can pump the water out of it. And in this case, our inspectors had been out there in advance of this, and on this spot and another spot had pointed out that they didn't feel that they were adequate if we got heavy rainfall. They fixed the one well, and on this one, they just put some straw bales behind it to reinforce it a little bit, which apparently, as I understand it, was not what our reclamation people had advised. And we got the heavier rain, and the one where they followed our suggestions held, and this one released the silt. I think it's important to keep in perspective the fine, tough standards that we impose on them. You know, when we're talking about this area of square footage, you know, it's probably about the size of this room where a few inches of silt got out onto some undisturbed land. And so they'll be able to clean that up. And, you know, so we're not talking about hundreds of acres of land that are destroyed or anything like that. You know, it's a small area that some silt got out, like happens often in agricultural enterprises. But we expect them to be at a very high standard in North Dakota's mining industry. And so we're trying to make sure that everybody understands that these inspectors are out there and making wise recommendations, and they really need to be followed, because this could have been a lot worse too.
This undisturbed land, do you know what it was used for, or what is used for? Is it cropland, pasture land?
I think it's just grassland.
Okay. It's just
it would be stuff that's on the mine site, so it's probably not being grazed.
Okay.
But it's just land that hadn't been disturbed, and so, you know, the eventual reclamation process should be pretty easy if we don't have these kinds of events.
I was looking at the consent agenda. There was another item on the consent agenda I wanted to ask about. It's a CBK3. It has to do with I presume it's a one-call violation.
Oh, it is. It was a potential violation. It was a case filed by, I have to look at the exact people, but when staff reviewed it, basically there was multiple tickets issued. There was not a violation of one call. It was just there was some training that had to take place between the people doing requesting the locates and the actual company.
Okay.
Four tickets had been issued for the same selection of the line. In one case, eight tickets for the same section of the line. It's not a violation of North Dakota one call. It's just the company was trying to do multiple call-ins so they could not have to go out and go through the 48-hour waiting period. They were just trying to, I don't know what exactly they were trying to do, but we had to basically walk through back to that, make sure they understand the one call system correctly.
So is the nature of the complaint is that these jokers are calling us every day to get another ticket?
That was the basis of the complaint.
Okay. The Ashley Renewable Project, what was the... I mean, if I recall this project, I mean, they had a site plan, it was approved, and they were ready to go?
Absolutely. Well, the commission had issued a certificate, and they had authorization to build the wind farm. At the time of the hearing, of course, we did not, you know, we don't, one of the good factors of the hearing is not they have someone to sell the power to, but we did ask the question, and their plan was to sell it then to the Tennessee Valley Authority. And so we issued the certificate. Everything was fine, and they just never built it. We received a letter from them a couple weeks ago basically asking for their unused portion of the siting dollars back, and they no longer would be moving forward with the project.
How much refund are they going to get?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. Jerry, do you know?
I don't have it either, but I would guess it to be probably in the neighborhood of $80,000 or so.
Because all we would have done is the actual hearing, $100,000 filing fee.
Okay, there's a $100,000 filing fee, and some of that was spent
on the actual hearing.
Okay. So basically their only reason for doing this is to get their money back. I mean, that's the only advantage to it?
At this point, that's the only advantage that I would see, because the certificate is good for 4 years, and we issued it in December of 2010. So they had a full year and a half almost before the certificate would have expired. Okay.
The Otter Tail, BK1, the power line, Ellendale to the South Dakota border.
Right.
Is there two $10,000 fees here?
There is. One would go to MDU and one would go to Otter Tail.
Okay. So there, and this is, we're talking about the same power line, are we not?
Correct. It's a multi-value project. They're going to be two of the biggest owners of it, if you will. But like Julie said, there'll be many others paying into the total cost.
So why did two companies have to pay $10,000 each for the same power line?
The cost is, until we merged the cases, they were two individual cases. By merging them, I guess perhaps we could have looked at doing a one filing fee, but I think it's appropriate. We collect the filing fee of each $10,000 for each one. We'll see how it goes, and whatever we don't use will get refunded.
It was mentioned that the cost of this project would be spread over the MISO region.
Correct.
Do you know how many ratepayers we have in the MISO region?
All of ours are in the MISO region. All of our 80,000, some for XL, whatever MDU's base is, and whatever Otter Tail is. That's our North Dakota investor owned. But I have, I wouldn't even venture to guess, because MISO now covers all the Midwest region and down into the southeastern part of the country.
And are we talking about all of the MISO ratepayers, even though some of them and probably most of them are not customers of MDU or Otter Tail?
That is correct. That's where the multi-value projects work. There's 17 of them that were approved, and North Dakota ratepayers will end up paying a little bit on some of these other projects. And that's hence the point of a multi-value project, to give regional stability in the grid. And we're zone one for the MISO region.
Okay, so all of the electric ratepayers in the MISO region, regardless of which utility they get their power from, are going to be paying for a piece of this project because it improves the reliability in the region? Is that the rationale?
I would not want to use the word all. Jerry wants to say something there.
The new companies with energy won't pay for this.
The new companies that just joined.
There's a transition period coming in for them, but everybody else will.
The new companies will, I'm sorry, what?
The southern region of MISO has been expanded. Energy came into it, so those customers would not have to be, for 5 years, they don't have to pay any of these costs. And just like we wouldn't have to pay any of their transmission costs down there for 5 years.
How many states are we talking about then for the folks that are going to have to pay? 14 states? Okay. All right.
That's right. Can't forget those in MISO.
Excuse me?
Not Manitoba, but they're part of MISO. But it's the importance of these regional planning organizations. These multi-value projects, I think, are pretty good projects. But we really have to be very cognizant of cost allocation in any of these transmission, because that's one of the things that the right of first refusal just keeps coming up over and over again, and who can build transmission lines. But right now, the multi-value projects, those I'm very comfortable with. It says we site new transmission in the area, making sure that North Dakota ratepayers don't pay for more than they should.
Okay, BK3, they're deciding whether to. First of all, it's the Lewis and Clark project. The Lewis and Clark power station's in Montana, is it not?
It is in Montana.
Uh-huh. And is one of the options here to essentially just close it down and substitute a gas power source for that, what it produces?
Well, we'll have to look when we get into the actual hearing on that, but I cannot remember all the different options on it. I would suspect that this would be their lowest cost option. That's what they're proceeding with.
They looked at, I've got the chart here, three different gas options that would include a gas-fired plant.
Options that would include a gas-fired plant and not operating the coal-fired anymore?
Right. They looked at shutting it down and converting it, a wide number of options.
And essentially their argument is, or their belief is, that installing some pollution control equipment on their coal plant is the best way to keep the plant open and using coal and generating power.
Correct.
All right.
The coal plant, the coal option was, I believe, $115 million less than retiring it and replacing it with the different options, and $118 million less than any of the natural gas-fired conversion options.
The RC2 and RC4, the variance permits, I was just kind of baffled as to what you were talking about in terms of variance to what. I was just confused about what that was about. We're talking about scales here?
Correct. We're truck scales, and they're like basically frac sand.
Okay.
Facilities.
They're for weighing trucks that carry frac sand?
Right.
Okay.
And we have some standards for large scales, and, you know, it includes the height of the scale above the bottom, you know, for getting under there and cleaning and working, testing. If it's an enclosed scale, how far the door has to be away, how long the ramp has to be, how steep the ramp has to be, how wide the ramp has to be, and just a whole number of things. There's also a federal guideline. And, you know, there's some reasons for states to have different or additional standards, such as, you know, weather conditions that might be expected in a region or a state or something like that. But it also can kind of cause some confusion. And I think that it's important that in the coming months, with all the oil activity that we've had and a lot of outside players coming in, you know, for many years there probably were no new scales built. But now with all this activity, we have people coming from around the country. I think we're going to monitor some of these that got set up. They should have contacted us, no doubt about it, and found out what our standards were. But they went with what they believed were, you know, kind of the more national standards in this handbook that exists, and set them up. And they don't quite meet all our guidelines. And I think this makes a good opportunity for us to test these scales a couple times, see if it's causing any problems. You know, if it turns out with these ramps that those trucks are wheel hopping up to get up the ramp and bouncing around on the scales and throwing them out of compliance right away, well, then we're going to have to go with our standards and make them redo this or shut it down. But if after a year and a half, two full seasons, and a couple of or even more than a couple of tests, if they're holding their accuracy, then perhaps we need to look at our own standards and make them more in line with what most of the rest of the nation has.
And we're talking about scales that are being used to weigh trucks that carry frac sand.
Correct.
Okay. Are the state standards geared more toward grain or trucks that carry farm commodities? Is there any relationship to that?
I don't think so, because really a lot of those old elevators where the grain handling is done actually don't meet the compliance either, don't meet our standards either, but they were grandfathered in one time. But many of those have pretty short and steep ramps. But they maybe don't have the level of adverse weather traffic on them either as these have. But these standards, I think, were designed after most of the country elevators were built. But, you know, with not only grain handling in mind, but also other aggregate material even before the frac sand started, but for gravel and scoria and things like that.
So basically what we have here, there's two instances where you've said, okay, Fairmont Minerals and Environmental Materials, Inc., you've set up these scales and they don't meet our standards, but we're willing to cut you some slack and we're going to check your scales to make sure that they're accurate over a period of time.
That is correct. And initially, with the first one at Blaisdell, Fairmont Minerals, mm-hmm. we had said till the end of this year they had to get into compliance. When we seen what it was going to cost them, frankly, it's really a big deal because this hill is right in their way mm-hmm. in order to get it right. And when we seen that and the fact that by then they had been tested by a private testing facility, And everything was pretty good. And so we just decided to give them another year to see once if it makes any sense really to force them into compliance just to get them to within our rules. Then the other facility at Killdeer, they didn't have that big problem of a hill right up against their facility. But just in fairness, they had submitted to us how they were going to get this done by fall. Really, the only thing they asked was if they'd get some adverse weather, if they could apply for a little bit of extra time after October. And we just decided that in fairness, since we were, you know, I felt it was likely we were going to grant this extra year to the one at Blaisdell, that just to be fair, we needed to grant the extra year to the one at Killdeer.
When does the extra year start to run today?
No, it was previously for October 31st of 13, and this makes it October 31st of 14.
For both of them?
Correct.
Okay.
Dale, if I could, I guess for me it's the
I wasn't so worried so much about the hill and those kind of things. It's a matter of where the scale's staying in tolerance, and we did additional testing. And so we've issued out staff approval for many variances over the years in scales, and I think it's just time to go back and look at all the rules that were put into place when the scales were not as accurate as they are now, because I personally think that a lot of our things could be revamped. And I know that's one of the things that we'll look at going forward, is that we maybe do a whole change in a lot of these scale requirements.
I noticed, and you read this at the end of the meeting, there's Bison 4, there's several other wind projects that you're having hearings on in the next...
Couple pipeline projects.
Yeah. Well, the wind, I was thinking about wind projects specifically. Is the wind with the, I guess, excluding the folks that decided they didn't want their site plan anymore, is the wind industry or wind construction coming back in North Dakota?
I think it is. We didn't see anything last year filed as far as wind projects, and this year we've already had the christening of Bison 3, if you will. Bison 4, we've got the application today. We'll be doing the hearing for the Courtenay Wind later on, so I think the production tax credit spurred those things on.
Do you see this continuing?
We guess we'll have to wait and see what Congress decides at the federal level for production tax credit, but I know that building the CapEx line in Fargo, this Ellendale line, the Minn Kota line from Minn Kota area from Center to Grand Forks have opened up the transmission congestion, so we probably will see more wind because the availability of transmission is increasing in North Dakota.
Does the project that we talked about, the Ellendale to South Dakota line, does that make the transmission of more wind energy possible?
The transmission of any type of energy, whether it was coal or whether it was wind or natural gas peakers, it just has another pathway for energy to move somewhere different. And the other way, it could come our way, too. If they're, for some reason, that they don't need it in the eastern part of the state, maybe we can move it back this way.
I think to add something, though, to your previous question regarding the big number of wind farm applications that we have, you know, last year, the production tax credit, my understanding was they had to be completed by the end of 2012 in order to get that. Then there was the one-year extension, but it's really more than a year extension because the 1 year only requires them to be started by the end of 2013. And so right now we have all these applications. They all seek to break ground in either the third or fourth quarter of 2013, so it's clear what the goal is to get it started. But when we talk about the likelihood of one or several or all of these actually breaking ground and being constructed, I would presume they're not only going to have to turn soil and get the project started, but they're going to want to make sure they have a customer for that power before they do that. So I think that's another hurdle that they need to cross here before the end of the year.
All right. Nick, do you have anything for us? All right, Dale, going once, going twice.
I got to be somewhere at 3. I'm
gonna be late. All right. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and close the regular meeting, and let's reconvene at 3:10 for the administration portion of the meeting.